On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, we got a trade. Curtis Mead to the Red Sox in exchange for Connelly Early. He's headed to the Nats. We dive very deep into that one. One of the more interesting swaps in recent deadline memory. And then we have Eric Fetty, White Sox pitcher, on to talk about his Papa Shot prowess. We run through all the results from a very busy weekend in the big. Strap in, buckle up. It's Barbacast time. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that cares more about Papa Shot than Tarek Skubal. I'm Jake Mintz. It's George Schusterman. Who cares where the best pitcher in the world is throwing next week? I want to know how White Sox hurler Eric Fetty broke the Papa Shot record.
Or has his record been dethroned since we first talked about it? We are going to talk to White Sox pitcher Eric Fetty later on in this Monday edition of Baseball Barbacast. But boy, do we have a lot of weekend baseball action to get to. But more importantly, oh my goodness, we already have a real actual trade, and that is our opener.
Now, this is how you start a party. What a wonderful opening salvo to this year's trade deadline as the Washington Nationals and Boston Red Sox consummated a swap late Saturday night, with the Nats sending corner infielder and second baseman Curtis Mead to the Boston Red Sox for left-handed starting pitcher Connelly Early. I think that a month ago, if I had told you that neither the Red Sox nor the Nats would be selling, outright selling at the deadline, you would have been quite surprised. Both Early and Mead are under team control for quite a while. This is not your typical deadline deal where teams are gearing up for the stretch run and for the playoffs. And that is part of what makes this deal so interesting. Very rarely do we see one-for-ones anymore, let alone one-for-ones with young big leaguers. This is the epitome of a very alluring challenge trade.
Yeah, I think you summed it up well on the YouTube short that you did, which, by the way, if you're not subscribed to the Yahoo Sports MLB YouTube channel, go do that. Helps us out a lot. That's where you can find all things Baseball Barbacast, including things that I'm alluding to now beyond the podcast that you hear here right now. Yes, we are so used to this time of year talking about how, oh, okay, expiring contracts for prospects. That's how it works. But can we not say, I mean, I don't want to say, take too much credit here, but were these front offices listening to our pod last week and thinking, hey, you know what? Maybe we can do major leaguer for major leaguer. That is something that is allowed under the current CBA. We don't have to just trade guys in A-ball for veterans. We are allowed to do this. And but the phrase you use there, I think, is the fun one. Challenge trade, right? Challenge trade. That is one that I think applies here, but is also, I don't know. Let's talk about that concept and why that is an appropriate fit for both of these. I think the premise of a challenge trade is that you are kind of saying, yes, we recognize that what we are doing is bold from both sides, but we are saying we believe more in the other guy than the guy we are giving up, even though both of them will have a lot of runway to prove us wrong. Is that maybe a good way to summarize it? And we can apply that to both of these players here with these specific
teams. That is a fair way to summarize it, and it is perhaps why it's not the best fit for this deal, because these two players serve very different functions. Because these two organizations have proven themselves to be very good at two very different things. The Washington Nationals, in year one under new president of baseball operations, Paul Pobo Tobo Nee, they've been incredible at getting juice out of hitters at the big league level. Their offense is the best in the sport. The Nats lead baseball in runs per game, home runs, and OPS. Those seem like three pretty important, you know, measures. Curtis Mead, great example of that. The Red Sox have been very good at developing pitching and have quite a bit of it. For a little bit of fun context, I was in the dugout on Saturday afternoon, well before this trade was finished. Shooting the S with a friend of the program, Nick Pecoro, who covers the Diamondbacks, and Diamondbacks GM Mike Hazen. And we were talking about pitching, and I said, well, you know, you can never have too much starting pitching. And Hazen goes, the Red Sox do. Couple of hours later, Connelly Early is a Washington National. And I think that is instructive. Like, very few teams have a surplus of starting pitching. Very, very few. The Red Sox are one of those teams.
Yeah. Jerry DePoto, take notes. is that where we're you know, heading? Where there's one of the few other teams that is going to try and offload some pitching for some offense. But yes, let's focus on Boston. I think what's interesting, though, is we focus on Early and where he fits into this mix. The timing here is not irrelevant. And I don't just mean that the deadline is coming up. I mean that sure. Connelly Early is currently on the injured list, and that depth that the Red Sox have has in some ways improved since the start of the season, even with the injuries, or at least maybe not improved, but proved itself even more legitimate than we thought. And that is mostly referring to the emergence of Jake Bennett, who has really become an incredibly stable arm for them since he arrived. Ironically, how did the Red Sox get Jake Bennett?
Yeah.
From the Washington Nationals in a trade this past offseason. And in the same way that the Nationals have kind of helped Curtis Meade unlock a next level, the Red Sox have clearly helped Jake Bennett unlock a next level to become something that is not only delivering to their major league team right now in the absence of some other injured pitchers, but also seems like someone that they are going to count on moving forward. Coming into the season, it seemed like Early and Peyton Tolley were the two that the Red Sox were building around. Those were the guys that were going to be tough to get in any sort of trade. Because Early has this minor elbow issue that we're hoping is not very serious, he has not pitched in the big league since June 30th. Tolley is dealing. Jake Bennett is dealing. They just got Ranger Suarez back. Sonny Gray is great. Pierre Crochet, shrug, who knows? But they looked at Early and said, you know what? He's not helping us literally right now when every game is very important. We need offense right now. The Washington Nationals value Connelly Early. No surprise there. And we can go out and get a bat that we believe in Curtis Meade.
That's why this trade, even if the Red Sox don't get the most out of Meade, even if Meade takes a half step back, and I do have some concerns there that I'll get to, when you're trading from a surplus, it's very difficult to really lose a trade. Because you are, yes, you are giving up a good player. And yes, I do think that if you're going to say who won the deal, I think the Nats did. But it's not as if the Red Sox had three starting pitchers and they could only, they couldn't afford to give one up. I think the criticism, if you're looking at it from the Red Sox perspective, is Curtis Meade the right guy to spend the Connelly Early bullet on? Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And here's where my doubts are about that. And this is, now we can get into the Curtis Meade side of the story. Meade, top 40, 50 consensus prospect in the sport, coming up with the Tampa Bay Rays, who they acquired him from the Phillies for Christopher Sanchez. Yes, for Christopher Sanchez. For a long while, it looked like the Rays had won that deal outright. Sanchez explodes into this unbelievable Cy Young contender. Meade kind of stagnates, in large part because he's not getting consistent at-bats. The Rays never really give him runway, never really hand him the keys to an everyday spot. He gets dealt at the deadline last year to Chicago in exchange for Adrian Hauser. And then he's kind of redundant on a White Sox roster that has a lot of young, interesting infielders. Doesn't make the team out of camp. Gets designated for assignment. The Nats swoop in, acquire him via trade for sixth round, recently drafted catching prospect Boston Smith, who's fine. And now I'm going to sneeze. Now my sneeze is gone. That's just how life works. Meade hits the ground running in DC. He starts hitting only against left-handed pitching as a right-handed bat, plays well, earns more playing time as Brady House struggles, as Jose Tena doesn't take the everyday third base job. And a key dynamic here is that he is receiving trust. He's getting faith from the front office, but crucially from manager Blake Butera. manager Blake Butera, who was the director of player development for the Rays when Mead was coming up the chain. And Mead has been very open about how Butera's faith in him was a key dynamic in him getting comfortable. Mead told friend of the program, Nats writer Spencer Nussbaum of The Athletic, quote, "Coming here with Blake was just great for me because I felt like I didn't need to prove myself to him. He made that clear. That was his main message. He was like, dude, if you just do your thing, we know you're good enough. And that was kind of special for me. I felt like up until that point, I'd been constantly trying to prove to everyone that I could play in the big leagues." There's two ways to look at this. One, optimistic lens. Curtis Mead is a different player now than he was 5 months ago because of the changes that were made and the everyday runway he was given from Blake Butera. The negative view, the pessimistic view, Curtis Mead has never been a good professional baseball player not around Blake Butera. And there is, now that is both silly and oversimplified, but like if he struggles a little bit and stops getting everyday plate appearances and they use him on the weak side of the platoon and then he starts tinkering, that in Boston under a high stakes environment, that is how it goes wrong if it goes wrong.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I did just want to hammer one more thing home about Mead and then talk about Boston's pitching a little bit, and then we'll flip it back to the Nat side. So I think what's so impressive about what happened with Mead, and this really highlights what you're getting at, is that he showed up like on opening day, right after opening day. Right. So this is not, all right, I spend a whole camp with a new organization and I'm going into the mornings and working with all the hitting coaches and we're revamping. We're doing, no, this dude showed up after spring training with the White Sox, was thrown into a pretty consistent role and just thrived. That is a credit. Of course, it's a credit to Mead, but it's a real credit to the Nationals' major league coaching staff to be able to foster that environment. That is an astonishing, and Butera is a big part of that. The hitting group is a big part of that. That is what's so impressive to me about what he was able to do. As far as believing in his breakout, there's one element of it, which is what you just got at, is how does Butera fit into that? But also, to not give too much credit to Butera, Curtis Mead did prove over multiple seasons in the minor leagues to have real impact offensive potential, right? This is not,
yes,
this breakout out of nowhere is not a total nobody at age 29 who had bounced around and suddenly had an 850 OPS, right? This is someone that did have pedigree despite him bouncing around once he kind of stagnated.
And is still only 25.
Yes, yes, yes. And so if you're looking at that, you're saying, well, great, we're thinking about it as getting someone who, if he hadn't graduated, would maybe still be considered a top 100 prospect type, which is not, especially for a position player, is a very valuable piece. So I think those are all the, I think that covers Mead pretty well. Also, if you didn't mention Australian, that's not an insignificant part of his development and an interesting part of his story. We've talked about it with Travis Bazzana. The history of Australian baseball includes a lot more pitchers than hitters. And if Curtis Mead can emerge as also a quasi all-star level talent as an offensive player coming out of Australia, that is not a small thing, especially now in a major market like Boston. That is a pretty big deal for Curtis. So I'm certainly hoping he can continue to deliver on that front.
Curtis Mead currently has 17 home runs. The single season record for an Australian is 21 home runs by Dave Nilsson. It feels like a given that he is going to break that at some point. And then 1 year soon, Travis Bazzana will surpass Mead. Let's pivot to the Red Sox.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the one last Red Sox thing I want to say before we pivot to the Nationals is, you mentioned trading from a surplus. It's hard to lose a trade. It's not just what they have at the major league level. It's that they feel confident in continuing to produce the next Connelly Early, the next Peyton Tolley. What their draft class from last year, at the very least Anthony Ianson, you know, Kyson Witherspoon and Marcus Phillips, it's been a little bit more up and down. But Anthony Ianson is someone who was a third round pick, maybe he should have been a higher pick, who already now looks like one of the best pitching prospects in the sport. And that was someone that did not have that value a year ago. That's what they did with Connelly Early, very boldly, and with Peyton Tolley. And so that's also where your confidence is to trade him away. It's not just that we can cover for him, we don't need him at the major league level right now. It's that when Sonny Gray is gone or old and some of these guys are not as effective anymore, this pipeline will keep on churning, which is a good transition to the Washington Nationals. Because, as we mentioned, what they have been successful at, as we've seen so far in this short sample, is that we've got hitters in place and we can help get hitters better. What we do not have is pitchers in place or pitchers that we know for sure that we can get better. So if we can get a young pitcher that has already proven himself as a competent major league starter that Connelly early has, and we're still in the early stages of figuring out what we can do on a pitching development side, this is just not a player you're normally able to acquire, whereas they're probably going to still score a bunch of runs, as they just literally showed us yesterday, without Curtis Meade.
And the difference for the Nats is like, okay, so this new regime shows up and they're like looking around and they see what they got. And there's a ton of legitimate talent on the hitting side. Talent that they have since gotten quite a bit out of, whether that's upgrading Abrams and Wood even more, whether that's Meade, whether that's Luis Garcia, whether that's miraculously fixing K-Bear Ruiz. They have done a lot of things because there was talent there that was underperforming. On the pitching side, frankly, I just don't think the clay was there to mold. You know, like the stuff was not very good. I believe the Nats bullpen is the worst stuff, like the lowest average velocity. That takes more time. Like if you want a guy to add three ticks on his heater, that's like a year plus of work, right?
Oh, yeah.
Whereas like if they had dudes throwing 99 that had no idea where it was going and there's like a usage unlock or it's like fill up the zone, that would have maybe gone a little bit quicker for them. So I know early is like less of a stuff guy where it's six pitch mix, it's 94, 95, it's deception, it's the left side. But even that compared to what the Nats have in house is pretty striking.
Yeah, and I would say the last thing I'd say about the Nats pitching in terms of evaluating it, the bullpen is what it is. It's undermanned. They just have not had enough pitchers who either have enough experience, have enough strike throwing, have enough stuff to succeed, and the results have not been surprising in that
big
regard.
Big league level pitchers. These are not at least capable major
leagues. Not in their current form whatsoever, and we've seen the results of that. And then, of course, you throw in Michaelis and Littell. Those are veterans who are there to eat innings. They're going to give up a lot of home runs, et cetera, et cetera. Beyond that, Foster Griffin is kind of his own story because he had this strange trajectory where he goes to Japan, really finds himself there, and clearly that has worked. I mean, the Nationals deserve credit for continuing to give him an environment where he can succeed. And then Cade Cavalli is the one guy who does have real stuff, and we have seen glimpses where it looks like he could be a really good starting pitcher, which I think lends some optimism to the current regime that they can turn Cade Cavalli into a good mid-rotation starter. Connelly Early will be a nice in-between blend, a real test case of someone that they're investing in that Paul Taboni also knows from his prior experience with Boston. Not that Paul Taboni was the one, you know, helping Connelly Early develop into a major leaguer, you know, up front and tinkering his pitch grips, but he knows the person, someone that he believes in, someone with a really interesting background. He spent his first 2 years of college at Army West Point and then transfers to UVA, a fifth-round pick, and then really explodes and is in the big leagues not long later. That's why I'm so excited about this for the Nats, to really see what they can do with this guy. And we have to just say, let's hope he's healthy. They seem to be confident that this elbow thing is not a significant issue. He's supposed to have a rehab start on August 3rd. But that's what makes me excited about it. They don't have access to this kind of talent. And now let's see what they can really do, because it's early enough in his career, all full pun intended, that they can really turn him into something that they really believe in. And we'll see with their ability to do that.
I think the last thing with the Nats is just where this team is at as we enter deadline day. So they're two games above 500, a game back of a playoff spot. That is unbelievable. They entered the season with 0.8% Fangraphs playoff odds. They are now, I believe, above 10%. That is an accomplishment, particularly with this porous bullpen. And they have given so many games away late by donating runs. Even when they win games, like yesterday afternoon, I was there, they're 10-5, 10-4. They just give away runs late. This has been an incredible Nats season. Do I think they're going to trade for Tarek Skubal? No. Do I think they're going to mortgage the future for the now? No. I still think they will trade Foster Griffin. I think they could trade Luis Garcia. Frankly, I would be floored, surprised, and disappointed if they traded CJ Abrams. Like, I would be, at this point, flabbergasted. Abrams has been the best player in baseball since the All-Star break. He is the exact type of franchise cornerstone that you're trying to acquire all the time. Is he good defensively at shortstop? No, not at all. Does it matter? No, not at all, because this guy rakes. The Nats fans should be over the moon. And I give Toboney a lot of credit for recognizing where the team is at and trading Curtis Meade for a guy that's going to help them this year. Does he help them in the next couple of weeks because he's hurt? No, probably not. But this is not a distant future move. Like, the Nats are now operating. Right. I think the most realistic way for the Nats to be operating at this deadline is, like, we can make noise in the playoffs in 2027. And I don't think anybody thought that that was going to be the case on opening day.
Yeah, and I would say the last Nats thing I'll just mention, it's wild that last year we were all just like, oh my God, CJ Abrams, James Wood. And now they've both leveled up again. And now we're talking about not just two really good, like all-star level building blocks, but like inner circle best players in baseball. These guys are both on the same team. It's really something to behold. And the Nationals did. You mentioned them, their place in the standings. They just took two out of three from a team that is right there with them in the standings. So they are showing that they do belong in this conversation. They took the two out of three from Arizona. But I do still think that, to your point, they are more likely to subtract than add. That said, can you get now-ish help for Foster Griffin, for Luis Garcia? It seems like that will be the goal. We will see if they are willing to settle for a lower-level prospect if it's someone that they certainly value. I wouldn't expect all of these to be major leaguer for major leaguer trades, I guess I would say.
Oh, no. But I guess what I'll say is I think that what has this first half really done for this franchise is it has accelerated the timeline. And so then I would imagine they are more likely willing to bring back upper level minor leaguers, not 17-year-old Dominican kid, right? Where I think that heading into the season, it's like Foster Griffin's anything. You just take a flyer on some dude in the DSL. No. Now it's like the future is closer than we anticipated. Let's wrap up quickly with the Red Sox.
Yes.
Because Craig Breslow, baseball robot, a man that has received a great deal of criticism for a lack of interpersonal tact, a lack of feel, a bit of a robotic approach and way of speaking. Whether or not this trade works out, whether or not Curtis Meade contributes to the Red Sox, for the first time in a long time, Craig Breslow said the right things. And I think that we have been critical of him, and I think that we owe it to him and to the universe to admit here and now that Breslow handled this well. You want to read the quotes, please?
Yes. So the Red Sox took two out of three over the Blue Jays this weekend, and instead of digging in on that, the Dylan Cease complete game, that was one of the strangest performances we've seen. His velo was down and he struck out 12. Dylan Cease is amazing. The Blue Jays are not. The Red Sox win this series to stay hot. And after this trade, Craig Breslow gave these quotes. So this is from Chris Cotillo. Quote, "I think the players deserve it. I think the fans deserve it. It has been a turbulent path to get here. But as we sit here today, a week out from the deadline, the resilience and toughness of this team has become very apparent. The opportunity to upgrade was something we were looking for." I like this quote. I think this next chunk is even more important. He continues. "A lot of front offices are looking at very similar information, so trying to find an opportunity to win a trade is not nearly as easy as it maybe would have been at another point. Instead, in this position, I've tried to shift our goal, not being to win the trade. Our goal is to make our major league team better. Sometimes the most straightforward way to do that is a need-for-need type trade." Incredible.
Yes.
Now, I will say this is nice to hear from any front office person, let alone Craig Breslow, who we've been very critical of. And yes, of course, they're all saying we're looking for opportunities to improve. But there is always that underlying feeling of everyone's trying to be the smartest person in the room. Quite literally, the exact criticism levied at Craig Breslow many times over and over and over. And for him to say, look, what we're trying to do right now is to make our major league team better, because our major league team has earned that. The fans have earned that, especially as someone running the Boston Red Sox. These are the correct words to say publicly, which we have not been able to say very often about Craig Breslow. And for that, I want to credit him.
Too many executives are trying to be the smartest guy in the room when the goal is to be the best team in the sport or to be good. Mm-hmm. It's not about outsmarting. It's about outplaying. It took Andrew Friedman, Dodgers head honcho, like a decade to figure this out. And since that clicked for him, the Dodgers have elevated into this untouchable juggernaut. So yeah, good job, Brez, you effing unstiff. Jordan, let's take a break here and welcome in Eric Fetty. We'll run through the weekend results after we have him on. And let's just provide just an iota of context about why we're having the Fedster on. Please.
Yeah. So on Friday's episode of Baseball Barbiecast, I gave my good for good, bad, ugly was a picture posted on Davis Martin's Instagram, his teammate on the White Sox pitching staff, of Eric Fetty in front of a Papa Shot, a mini basketball, you know, mini game that you might see at an arcade. You see it in many different forms, depending on your arcade of choice. But this is certainly one that you can purchase. And most importantly, is Eric Fetty standing next to what seems to be a leaderboard within the White Sox clubhouse, which includes not just members of the White Sox. It does include Mr. Fetty at the top, but it is includes some other interesting names. And so we asked people, we said, hey, do you want us to get Eric Fetty on to talk about this? And enough people were like, hey, yes, we do. And even if they didn't, we probably would have asked Eric to do this because we like Eric Fetty a lot and we thought this would be very funny. So without further ado, we're going to take a break. When we return, you're going to hear Mr. Fetty talk about his Papa Shot leaderboard. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Baseball Barbiecast. We are now so excited to welcome in someone who hasn't been on our podcast since 2015. It's Eric Fetty of the Chicago White Sox. Eric, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks for having me, guys. Glad to be back.
Now, Eric, you pitched yesterday. You guys won. The White Sox are a delight. Don't care. Let's talk Papa Shot. So earlier, I think it was this past week, Davis Martin on Instagram posted a picture of you in front of a Papa Shot leaderboard and a Papa Shot thing, and that you had broken some sort of record, presumably in the Rangers clubhouse. Can you walk us through what transpired this past week regarding your Papa Shot abilities?
Yeah. Well, like you said, in the Rangers clubhouse, they have a Papa Shot. It's one of my favorite trips of the year. Because I know that's like a, I guess, my hidden talent. So I think I had three records in a row coming into this year. So, you know, showing up was the time to defend the title and go for number four. So still, I mean, there's still a couple months left, so someone could maybe try to overtake. But showing up to the clubhouse, we knew I was actually starting game one. So Papa Shot wasn't a thought until game two and three of the series. But as soon as I finished my start, came to the field the next day, and it was all business. So
so to be clear, there is a new leaderboard each season.
Correct. Yeah. As far as I know, as soon as the season ends, they'll wipe it clean and start fresh.
Okay, so we've already learned a lot here. First of all, my mistake for assuming that this was, because when I first saw this, I thought this was something that you, as a Papa Shot enthusiast, had purchased for the White Sox clubhouse, and that you were all, you know, you were making sure that everyone had the opportunity. But no, this is something in Texas that you have to, like, wait all season to go defend your crown. You mentioned this is the third year in a row that you have gone and participated in this, right? So for those of you unfamiliar with Eric Fetty, a KBO icon comes back after an incredible season with the NC Dinos. And then in 2024, that was your first experience with the Texas Rangers visiting Clubhouse Papa Shot. Is that correct?
Yeah, now I'm thinking maybe 22. I think that's how I get to year four. And then I
had to so before you my left. Title.
But I think that's right. But I mean,
it's like when you look at like the NBA titles in the 90s, and there's the 2 years where the Rockets won because Jordan decided to go play baseball. It's like,
yeah, that was my only tour in Korea.
It was your tour in Korea was the same exact thing.
Yeah.
So just to be clear, how far back does your Papa Shot enthusiasm go? Is this something that you've kind of come to late in life, or was this a passion of yours at a very early age?
So I think around middle school, somewhere like in that time period, I went to an event with some friends, and it was like one of those ones where you get, you know, raffle tickets and they give you prizes, and I, you know, I'm not with my family, and I get some raffle tickets, and the prize I won was the grand prize, and it was like a very legit Papa Shot, like the most ridiculous thing ever. And so I come home from like a trip with my friends, and like, hey, mom, dad, like I won a huge Papa Shot. And they're like, oh, goodness. And we had this like loft area at our house that really didn't have much in it. And I just begged to put the Papa Shot there, and it became, you know, my parents were nice enough to let me do that. And it became like, come home from school and just rip Papa Shot. So all my friends, all of us, you know, this is like a long time coming. I got my 10,000 hours in on the Papa Shot to get to where I am today, you know?
Okay. So you have, it works out as a kid where it's like, oh, you have it. You've got the home game. I'm grinding every day after school. As you enter professional baseball, you're a first round pick. You go to college, you're a first round pick. At any point along the way, did you purchase, again, especially now as your spending power increases and maybe the size of your home also increases, have you owned a Papa Shot since your youth at home to continue to refine your craft?
Yeah, there's one in the garage. definitely got to purchase one at Costco. It's not quite as nice as the one I used to have. I don't know how I ended up with one so nice or who donated that to a raffle, but I have like the Costco version of the Papa Shot at home.
Okay. And then my question is, you know, one of the important parts of your career is you got TJ. How long after surgery did you get back on the Pop Shot?
I don't know. There might have been a lull there for a little while, like you said, before I really owned my own home and, you know, was kind of in the minor league grind. There might have been a couple years off of the Pop Shot grind. But so, yeah, gave myself my elbow lots of time to heal before got very back important. To that.
They say the Pop Shot command's the last thing to come back. Go ahead, Jordan.
Yeah, they do say that. Just not quite the same rotation on the ball, you know.
Okay, so let's talk strategy here. Okay, we just mentioned that the TJ maybe impacted some of the exact range of motion, the exact form, assuming you're going right-handed. I don't know how proficient you are going lefty, because Papa Shot is form, it is accuracy, it is precision, but it is also speed. And I have seen a lot of different strategies involving, are we going both hands? Are we trying to maximize speed? And then most importantly, are you I'm just drilling the backboard perfect every time? Or are you swishing every single one?
Yeah, I'm definitely shooting one-handed. You know, left hand directly into right hand, like quick feed, like trying to be like a good shortstop or something, turn into double play. But probably like my biggest thing is like, you know, you want to get as many shots off as possible. So I try to reach far up, never let the basketballs like get to the back rail, like keep them as far away from the back rail as possible. But then it swishes. I'm going straight for nothing but net.
Okay. Next question. This is also very important. So Jake pointed out when we saw the leaderboard, had some really interesting names on it. And we noticed, especially with, I believe it was Ryan Thompson, I believe Ellie De La Cruz was on there, a lot of long arms, long limbs. I'm not accusing you of anything here, but like there are definitely people, especially big, strong, tall, long athletes that are basically reaching out and just kind of
like, Ellie, I'm not saying they're going. Ellie yeah. can do like the Space Jam arm right, stretch right. dunk thing.
Probably. How close are you getting to the hoop, or are you sitting back there and draining them from kind of proper distance?
I got a little lean in there. I'm probably cutting it down by at least a quarter of the distance. I
would some say. Good extension.
But the Rangers clubhouse guys, they have to be like, you gotta bug one of them and be like, hey, like, can you watch me to make sure this is a real attempt?
Okay. So it's
so like they're the ones determining.
Yeah, like if you do it and nobody's there to witness from the staff, it's not supposed to count. So
then my next question is, how many times over those 2 days, because you know, you throw day one of the series, how many times did you attempt this?
I think my best score ever was last year. I got like a 172, I think. But then I hit 168 on like my fourth try. So it's kind of like, dang, I'm going to have to like go crazy to beat that. So luckily I put up a big score early and kind of relaxed a little, made sure everyone could enjoy their days, not sit there watching me play Papa Shot for
I was going to say, I love the idea of like the clubbies and the clubbies like, God damn it, Fetty's coming yeah. in. Like,
yeah, they're probably sit stupid there. Guys coming to the clubhouse, like circling the White Sox is like, what a bad trip.
So tell us, paint a picture more about where this is in the clubhouse, because we have been in there for All-Star, but I don't remember seeing it in there. And that's certainly one of the newer ballparks also. So I imagine it's pretty big, certainly in Texas. Is it like in a separate room? I know the new Cleveland visiting clubhouse, they kind of have a game room that's like off to the side, but that's different because what it used to be in Cleveland is those games were literally just right there in the clubhouse for everyone to play, like right next to the lockers. Is there a designated area for the Mamba Shot, or are you getting in everybody's way while they're preparing for their game?
No, Texas, beautiful clubhouse. Probably the best visitors clubhouse in baseball. I would say, but they have a separate like player lounge room, and that's where it's at. And they got like some chairs in there to play. Like, I think there's a PlayStation in there, and then there's like, one of those like arcade game. You know, it has like 500 games on the arcade machines. They have that in there. So, yeah, shout out to those guys. They do a great job of having a enjoyable visitors clubhouse.
Because at the end of the day, you guys really are just overgrown children. My last question is, what is the clock here? Like, how much time is on the Papa Shot that you're able to put up 160? Like, what are the official rules?
So there's a 30 second with the last 10 seconds being three pointers. And then if you hit, I think like 40 points, there's a bonus of 15 seconds, 5 2-pointers, 10 three pointers. And then if you hit like 65, you get the third bonus of 10 more seconds of three pointers. So 55 seconds total.
Okay, so it's like the old home run derby rules that are like convoluted, where you just keep getting more time. I see.
Yeah.
Interesting. Exactly.
But you're making 40 plus shots, 50 shots. Like, I'm trying to think of how many times the ball is going through the hoop. Because the point total is different than the number of times you're making a shot. But that's quite the pace there, Mr. Fetty. My goodness.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's the hidden talent, and got to get hot when the three pointers are there. That's for sure.
So I'm now just quickly going to take a look at I'll finish with this. Taking a look at the rest of the Rangers schedule. Schedule. And I'm curious if there is anyone around the league that you are not afraid of, but perhaps wary of coming in to the ballpark, Globe Life Park, and dethroning you. Giants, Orioles, Nats, Angels, A's, Rays, Red Sox, Mets, Blue Jays. Those are the teams.
How much are you talking about? Is this a talking point, especially now that you put it out there? Although this is multiple years running, like, you have to have this reputation at this point.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of like people that had. I remember, I think it was 2 years ago or what, maybe last year, Michael King had a really high score. And he made me sweat for it. It took me a lot of tries to beat his score. So luckily, it looks like, unless for some reason
Padres he's traded. Already came to town. Padres already came to town this year. So maybe he was hurt or not there or was starting or something.
His name wasn't on the board.
Not on the board.
And then I know there's a couple guys with the Braves that are pretty solid. Olson, I know, is good. But I already texted him. I had a short stint with the Braves last year. So I texted Olson a picture of the score and said, like, good luck. And he's like, you're lucky we're not going there. So, you know, a little fun banter.
You're good. You're safe. You
never know. There's new players every year. You never know.
So the one guy that I would keep an eye on is James Wood.
I could see it. Long arms, James, too.
James Wood, long arms. Dad played college hoops. Like, Nats headed to Texas in August.
Oh.
We'll keep you updated. You know, James feels like the type of guy that could, you know, make you sweat.
I could definitely see it.
My last pop shot question, then we'll finish with one White Sox question. Talk some actual baseball. I understand you got engaged to someone recently. Is that
correct? Yeah, over All-Star break.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
We'd love to see it.
It was a long time coming, but very happy. It was a fun time.
Long time coming, which is a perfect transition. How does she feel about this obsession? Is it something that, like, you had to admit to her at some point, be like, look, just so you know, there are going to be times when I'm just going to be in the garage getting after it. Like, sorry, sorry, not sorry. Have you had to have conversations about
me? You're going to love all of me.
Yeah, she's been very supportive. Okay. She's actually, I'm pretty positive. She's the one who bought the Costco Papa Shot for our house in Arizona.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, so okay. She's a keeper.
Talk about it. It keeper, what I hear is enabler is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
But I'm not mad about it. Keeps you in shape. That's true. One White Sox question for you, Eric Fetty. Jake alluded to it earlier, but you guys are having one heck of a season. It seems like, especially someone, this is now your second stint with the White Sox, right? You come back from Korea, you have the season with them then when that was not as much winning at that point. I know you had a good little stint with them in 24, but a little bit of a different vibe. A lot of new faces have arrived in Chicago since then. Now you're back in a comfortable organization, a place that certainly means a lot to you since you came back and had success there. Specifically with Murakami. With the game he had yesterday, the two homers, and what he's kind of brought to this, the energy to this team. It's obviously not a one-man show, the season that we're seeing from Vargas and Colson and Davis Martin and all these guys. But just broadly, how much fun has it been to be on the Chicago White Sox this season, and how much fun has it been watching Munisaka Murakami?
I mean, it's a complete 180. I mean, I think, you know, this team is getting so much so much enjoyment, so much fun watching how much we've hit and slugged. I mean, it felt like, I know we went through a little cold stint there, but to start the year, and I mean, the amount of guys on our team that are just slugging, hitting homers, Mune kind of leading that charge. I mean, he's been so important in our lineup. We just played the Astros, and you know, when I was having my media talk to him, I was like, I'm sure it feels like what probably Yordan is doing for them. I know he's having an MVP caliber year, but if you don't want to pitch to Mune, I mean, what it's doing for Vargas and Colson behind him, you know, just guys clogging the bases. And I mean, we have guys hitting 20 plus homers behind him. So if you want to deal with them, good luck. And I think it's just been kind of the mindset of, I mean, like I said, like, just been fun watching those guys hit homers. And, you know, as a pitcher, we're never out of the game. I've seen us put up some big innings and score a ton of runs, and that's probably the exact opposite of what we were doing in 24.
Yes, it certainly was. Eric Fetty, thank you so much for joining us on this Monday morning. We appreciate the time. I promise it won't be another 11 years before we have you on the podcast again. But good luck we hope that your Pop Shot title can hold for another season, and we hope that you're able to defend it again next year, my friend.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me, guys.
And And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. We talked about Papa Shot. We talked about a trade. Might as well talk about the baseball. Let's start with the sweeps.
Clean up, everybody, everywhere.
There is no shame in getting swept.
I never got swept.
You guys got swept.
Two sweeps over the weekend. The Padres taking all three in Miami against the Marlins and the Rays. All three at home against Cleveland. Let's start in Miami where the fish stink.
Yuck. This was also part of my good, bad, ugly on Friday. I looked at the Marlins W9 and I said, that's bad. That's some bad baseball. This team that was the best in all of MLB in June has plummeted back down to earth, back below sea level, we'll call it, as the Marlins are now below 500, which is really disappointing considering how good the vibes were. That run differential remains oh so barely at +2, but that is not much consolation considering how poorly they've been playing. 12 games in a row is a franchise record for the Fish, which I know they haven't been around that long, but they've also had some really bad seasons in there, and they've never lost 12 in a row. So that kind of goes to show you how bad this stretch has been for Miami. But let's focus on San Diego. I am wearing my Padres hat for a reason. At the same time, it's not like the Padres were actually playing that well before this stretch. They were also kind of flopping around in the middle, slightly above 500, slightly below. We know they started off so well over those first 2 months. They've crashed back down. Their offense was awful. But what has happened over the last month or so is that the bats that we have just been panning as so horribly embarrassing, they were at the bottom of every offensive category for months, is now starting to come together. Manny Machado is starting to hit like a future Hall of Famer. Jackson Merrill has certainly heated up. Luis Rengifo is giving them big swings. The pitching, the bullpen remains elite as planned. No surprise there. The starting pitching remains a bit of an issue, but credit to the Padres for, I mean, listen, they're 500 now. They still have a negative run differential. They're still a couple games out of that third wildcard spot, but it's really important for them to be able to take care of business against the struggling Marlins team. And most importantly, as we think about the deadline, their six games before the deadline are two against the Rockies, four against the Giants. So if you thought that AJ Preller was about to say, all right, Mason Miller, adios, I was always skeptical of that because I just don't think that's how he's wired. Maybe I'll be proven wrong if they do fall on their face against these bad teams over the next week. But I don't know what it looks like for the Padres to buy, but I still expect that that's roughly where we're going to end up over the next week.
A bat or two feels like a no-brainer for San Diego if they do decide to go for it. There was a quote, someone like told Bob Nightingale, did you see this? This was freaking hilarious. Padres GM AJ Preller. AJ Preller, quote, just doesn't sound the same. One GM told Bob Nightingale. Incredible. He just doesn't have it. The game's not in him anymore. Like he...
Yeah, well, how do you interpret that? What is that supposed to imply? And also the timing there is important because if that was before that they swept the Marlins, sure, maybe the implication was he's actually thinking about selling. He's actually not trying to just empty the farm again.
I mean, but I'm only skeptical. You can only run the race at full speed for so long, you know? So I would understand if AJ's getting a little bit tired of his own approach. I just credit to Manny Machado for locking into his WCC BBB, figuring out what he was doing wrong, turning those numbers around. Look, we made fun of him when he went on that anti-analytics rant, and since then,
deserved. He's been great. So, still deserved. He's one of the best players of a generation. We can't be totally shocked that he figured it out. The last thing I'll say about San Diego, you say a bat or two. I mean, sure, yeah, the bottom of this lineup and the bench is no bueno. They need starting pitching as much as anybody. And I don't know if they have enough to go like buy low on a Freddy Peralta. That sure sounds like a good idea. I don't know if they have enough. Freddy Peralta, I still think, is going to get a couple good prospects because starting pitching is hard to get. And I think someone will talk themselves into it. But I think they need starting pitching is what they need more than anything. They cannot bullpen their way all the way to the postseason, let alone through it. So I think starting pitching is most importantly. Speaking of starting pitching, are we about to talk about Sandy Alcantara for the next week as we were for two straight years and then maybe now will again? I think we are. Maybe he'll be a Padre. maybe he'll be a Padre. I don't know. That's a lot of money to take on for that current payroll situation, but I don't know.
Beach maybe to beach. Be a Padre. Manny Machado, since his WCC VBB rant, is slashing 256, 339, 542 with an 880 OPS and 12 home runs in 44 games.
Love that.
Just good for him. Happy for Manny. The other sweep this weekend, the Rays taking all three over the Guardians, who are now on a season high L5. My favorite game of this three-game set was the Rays winning 11-3 on Friday in what was Jose Ramirez's first game off the IL for Cleveland. Joey Cantillo, bombed by the bottom of the Rays lineup. Ryan Vallade and Richie Palacios both homer, and Nick Fortes goes 4-for-4. That's Rays baseball. Also Rays baseball, Sunday, when Drew Rasmussen is incredible. The Guards have one hit, and the Rays win 1-0. 10th sweep of the year for the Rays.
10th sweep of the year. As you mentioned, L5 is the longest losing streak for Cleveland. Yeah, Jose Ramirez being back is a big deal. He did come back last week. He was in the Twin Series. But I don't know. This Guardians offense in the last month or so has been so bad. And Jose Ramirez can only do so much. But it is nice that he comes back. Like the pressure on these kids, whether it's Zalater and Bizana, was really started to ramp up. And I do feel like that Ramirez is going to, like, duh, this is not mind-blowing analysis. Jose is going to help. I expect him to be awesome the rest of the way because he is also a future Hall of Famer. And that is what he's going to do. That said, the Rays, this was a very impressive showing from their pitching staff. Good for them. 10th sweep for them. Yeah, no other team has more than 7 sweeps this season. And yeah, my broad Rays take is that just go do it, man. Go do something silly. You have all these prospects. You just had another loaded draft. Like, go for it. Go try and win something.
Yes.
You now have a decent lead over the Yankees. You have a real chance to win the division. You have a real chance to have the top seed in the American League. Make the road through the American League come through the trop. Make that happen, okay? Like, that is a place where you can win baseball games. I would love to see them try. That is a team I would love to see chase that top seed.
Zach Neto.
Ooh. Like where your head's at. I like Thanks, where your man. Head's at.
First time for everything.
nicely done. One more note on Cleveland before we go fast. We are not going to talk about the Hall of Fame this weekend because, frankly, we'd rather focus on the trade deadline and what's happening on the field. So congrats to Jeff Kent. Congrats to Carlos Beltran. Congrats to Andrew Jones. However, I would like to take a moment to congratulate Paul Hoynes, who has been covering the Cleveland Guardians Indians franchise since 1983, folks. I mentioned it when he won the BBWA Career Excellence Award during the winter meetings. I have been honored to share a press box with this man. He is such a kind soul and someone who is still doing the job at age 74. And it was so cool to see Hoynesy get to give a speech on Saturday. And I was just like, holy crap, I can't believe this person is still doing this and doing it with incredible grace and humor and levity. So shouts out to Paul Hoynesy. He belongs in the Hall of Fame in that regard. That made me happy.
From one Hall of Famer to another, big weekend from How You Lee. Let's go around the league. Royals and Tigers with a 4-game split. But you know how in the Premier League, when two teams tie and one team celebrates and the other team looks like their dog died? That is how the Tigers and Royals felt like they reacted to this 4-game split, as the Detroit Tigers, with just 4 at home, with all that's going on around their deadline, Tarek Skubal trade rumors swirling everywhere, the bad Royals team in town, and the Tigers cannot take full advantage. They win the first two games of the set, including a magnificent Skubal start on Friday. He strikes out 12 in 7 innings. Looks like himself. A big day from How You Doing, Lee. Tigers win that 2-1. Then in the last two games, the late innings kill Detroit. They do not have enough arms. The Jacob Wagyu spec, high leverage up down, results in a Nick Lofton go ahead shot in the ninth. Royals win that 3-2. But we did have another How You Lee homer. Salvi became the Royals franchise leader in homers in that game, which was cool. Congrats to Salvador Perez. And things are even worse on Sunday for the Tigers. Fromber's okay. Royals go up 3-0. Tigers fight their way back. It's invigorating. They're going to take 3 out of 4. Tarek Skubal's going to live here forever. No. 4 outs away from the win, Drew Summers allows a go-ahead two-run shot left on left against Michael Massey. And the Royals win 5-4. This is just like, oh, this whole thing. It's just, oh, Tigers. Mm.
Yeah. I mean, 4 one-run games is... that's stressful enough, even win or lose there. But considering the stakes, it's just every – you can't – we said it last week when they didn't sweep the Angels. You just can't afford – every loss now is inching Scott Harris a little bit closer towards doing it, okay? And let's, I don't got to explain to you what doing it means.
Let's check in.
That said, oh, yeah.
Where are you at?
Oh, yeah, let's do it.
Does Tarek Skubal get traded? Monday, July 27th.
I'm still no. I'm still on the side of the pillow.
I'm yes.
Okay. Well, but hey, How You Lee, 922 OPS since the start of June.
God longest hitting streak ever, 11 games for a Taiwanese-born player. I'm in a group chat with a couple people called How You Been, where we just send one another How You Lee highlights. It's been happening all year. Even when he was in the minors. So it was a big weekend for the How You Been group chat.
Yeah. And that's also significant because Sung Chae Chang of the Boston Red Sox was just sent down. He'd been really, you know, contributing to the best of his ability. I think his longest hit streak this year was like 3 games. So he wasn't exactly threatening that title. But now he's going to go to Worcester and prepare to eventually take How You Lee's title. All right, one other series before we really speed up, and that is the Dodgers of Los Angeles. Ever heard of them? They were going for the sweep on Sunday in Queens, finishing up this ridiculous East Coast post-All-Star road trip. Yankees, Phillies, Mets. They take the first two
Yankees,
over
Phillies,
New York.
White House, Mets.
White House, yes. Yes, sorry we didn't do a whole episode on that. Really, we certainly could have, but... we held back there. The Dodgers do take the first two from the Mets on Friday and Saturday. Roky Sasaki throwing 1 billion miles an hour again. Luis Robert Jr., though, he had a home run. He's going to get traded, most certainly. Yoshinobu Yamamoto is quite good on Saturday. Not his best, but still a very good pitcher. Kyle Tucker homered on Friday and Saturday. Oh, look at Kyle Tucker contributing. How nice, how uplifting to see Kyle Tucker playing a role on this team, homering 2 whole games in a row to get his OPS over 700. That is just great stuff. But the Dodgers cannot sweep on Sunday because Tyrone Taylor said not so fast. And that was even in a game where Freddie Peralta was once again not very good in what is probably his last start as a New York Met. The big news for the Dodgers... of course, Edwin Diaz returning this week. That is interesting. Curious to see how he looks. Curious to see if they just thrust him right back into the closer role or if they continue to let some of their other high-leverage guys get those innings. Seth Halverson, by the way, he's looking quite good in AAA. No surprise there. And then, of course, Shohei Ohtani was supposed to throw another bullpen, and then he was like, nah, never mind, I'm not going to do that because my knee still hurts. So we will just continue to wait to see if Ohtani is going to pitch anytime soon. He will continue to lead off and hit baseballs very hard. There is also an ESPN podcast coming out this week about, remember that whole thing where Ipe stole like hundreds of millions of dollars? Yeah, so yeah. We're going to have a special podcast about that. This is unfortunate that this is not coming out in the off season when we could probably dig in a lot more. I mean, I do plan to listen to this.
There's a lockout coming.
But there is. That's true. We will have plenty of time to review this. But yeah, I mean, I'm interested to listen to this. I mean, I don't think I'm going to necessarily learn too much other than, oh my God, right. Shohei should have been looking at his money more. But people will be talking about it, I'm sure.
I don't want to, I'm not labeling this as misleading. However, the interview that they have with Ipe Mizuhara, the evil Ipe, is from the beginning of that 2024 season when everything originally went down, and ESPN like had a long call with Ipe at the time and that was recorded. My understanding is that Ipe has not spoken to media since his conviction and incarceration.
In jail.
Right. So this is, he's just in jail. Yeah. Like, this is not as if like ESPN went to prison to like track Ipe down. Like, that call is from right when everything kicked off. So we're not going to get like reflective Ipe. If you wanted reflective Ipe, then you need to wait a little bit longer. One last Mets thing. Planting a flag in the sand right now. Okay.
Oh.
Overlooked, underrated, under the radar deadline piece that has an impact in October. Tyrone Taylor. Tyrone Taylor, who has been raking since he got off the IL, who is very good against lefties, who plays a nice center field, is going to get traded this week. He's going to end up on a contender as
right-handed,
the weak side of an outfield platoon. And he's going to like go yard off of Skubal or Christopher Sanchez or, you know, some other Foster Griffin, like some good lefty. Tyrone Taylor is going to take deep in an NLDS or NLCS.
Or an ALCS. Or he could be an American leaguer. Let's not rule that out. Anything is possible. All right, we have some more baseball to talk about. Let's go fast. It's turbo mode.
Faster than fast, quicker than quick. I am lightning.
I feel the need for speed.
It's turbo time.
Braves, 2 out of 3 over the Orioles. We could do an hour on this series. It was a mess. The Orioles should have swept. They did not. In fact, they lost the series. Oh, man. The O's are a frustrating bunch. I still think that they are going to go for it, especially now that President of Baseball Operations Mike Elias has the full support of ownership. David Rubenstein, O's owner, during the Kyle Bradish extension presser, said, quote, Mike was the baseball executive of the year in 2023, regarded as outstanding by his peers and other people in baseball. He's done a terrific job. Very, very happy. And we couldn't be more pleased. I think you could be more pleased. Even if you really like Mike Elias, I think there's a world where you're happier than you are. Right? Right? Like, yeah.
But that's interesting that you just said you're taking this as like a vote of confidence to go forward. I almost interpret this as go ahead, trade Taylor Ward. Do whatever you want, Mike Elias. You're awesome at this, so I trust you. Which I don't know. We'll see. This week will determine that. I could see it both ways, but it is interesting.
I am officially out on any votes of confidence. They mean nothing to me. Irrelevant.
I totally
votes
agree
of confidence
with you.
Are irrelevant.
I totally agree with you. We did this. We've done this with managers already. We've done this with I'm with you. But yeah, I just had to pause and marvel at couldn't be more pleased. That is just honestly a shocking quote considering the circumstances.
Do you know who could be more pleased? You know who could be more pleased? Mike Elias.
I don't think Mike Elias would say this.
Yeah. I don't know, man. This is just another data point that maybe, just maybe, David Rubenstein and his bags of money and his overeager demeanor doesn't get it. And that's not to say that
not yet anyway.
Mike Elias isn't not the yet. Guy. Like, I'm not. Yeah. This is not really about Mike Elias. This is about David Rubenstein looking at the operation and going, heck yeah.
That is exactly my point. The evaluating Mike Elias is a separate conversation, but looking at the situation,
you could be more pleased.
Woohoo! Yeah.
You could be more pleased. I promise.
He has this quote that says, we've had some injuries, but that's not Mike's fault. Like, if that's how you're looking at it and you're saying it's that simple, that is a very interesting interpretation. Speaking of injuries, the Twins take 2 out of 3 over the A's. And Shea Langeliers is very injured. He has a torn meniscus. That is important because Shea Langeliers was one of the few things going well for the A's this season, and now he might not play again this season. That is, of course, important because that would maybe prevent the A's from losing 100 games. Maybe they would only lose 95 if Shea Langeliers was playing. Instead, not only will he not help them not lose baseball games for the rest of the year. He also will probably not be a particularly appealing trade candidate with a torn meniscus. And whether he was going to get traded or not, it could have been debated. But that is now an option on an A's team that sucks and also doesn't really have that much to trade. This is pretty brutal to lose Shea Langeliers at this interval. And this is one of the most disastrous seasons in baseball is what has gone on in Yolo County this year. I honestly don't really know how else to say it. And it's disappointing because I think that they have made some strides in some regards and there's some things to look forward to. But I don't know, man, this is bad. This is really, really bad. So, you know, they don't get swept this weekend, but this was a very, very bad weekend for the A's of Yolo County.
Yankees 2-3 over the Phillies. A lot going on in this series. Phillies offense really bad for the first two. Schlitler-Luzardo showdown was awesome on Friday. Cody Bellinger on the IL. Spencer Jones up. Phillies offense breaks out on Sunday against Will Warren. Joey Votto on the broadcast for Sunday Night Baseball was really great. Christopher Sanchez was good, not amazing. But the important thing here, Jordan, we have a new bookend. For those of you who have been listening to the show all year, you know that we had a discussion about your MLB bookends. Who was the first big leaguer younger than you? And who was the last big leaguer older than you to debut? And earlier this year, the Mets called up grandfather Matt Selinger, who was older than me and younger than Jordan. But the Phillies had a gent by the name of Brian Keller, 32 years old, made his major league debut on Saturday, and frankly was pretty solid. Is it a good thing that the Phillies are doing this? No, probably not. But they did, and we have a new bookend. Cubs over Pirates. Let's move over there. Pirates, just some weird bad base running, bad pitching in the second game. Paul Skeens gets cranked. 11 strikeouts, but not really preventing runs. PCA gives him a swirly. Game three, Jameson Taillon allows three homers, including a Ryan O'Hearn grand slam. Our boy, Esmerlin Valdez, hits his 14th homer. Pirates bullpen does its best to blow it, but does indeed avoid the sweep. The Pirates should be going for it at the deadline. Brewers over the Rockies. We'll just focus on game three. Holy crap, Jacob Mizorowski. He strikes out, I think it was 11 of the first 13 hitters he faced. Was rocking up. It looked like the best game ever pitched until Cole Kerrig popped him, hitting 102 off the plate, backside home run. One of the more unbelievable swings. Brewers still win 11-2. Reds 2-3 over the Cardinals. I think the Cardinals should sell. I have decided. I know they're only one game, and a half back of the wild card. I don't think this team, the people that run this team think that this team is good. I think that this team is going to sell. The Reds are a mess all their own.
I think the Cardinals are going to be a sneaky main character. We'll see what ends up happening over the next week because they are in the standings. It would seem a little aggressive to go so far in the other direction, but they got stuff to move, and I think that they will entertain all offers. Two more series. The Rangers and Mariners continue their four-game series tonight. That's important because the Rangers took two out of the first three. If the Rangers win today, it's Kumar Rocker against George Kirby, the Rangers will have the tiebreaker in the season series over Seattle, which, as things are, you know, tracking, could be extremely important in this extremely underwhelming division. So we will see what happens there. The Mariners did rally on Sunday to win 6-4, which was very, very important. They also fired their assistant hitting coach, Bobby Magallanes, for reasons that remain unclear other than to basically just be like, do something different, even though you're not the problem, Bobby Magallanes, but we're not happy with how you're hitting, so got to fire somebody, which I don't totally agree with, but such is the nature of this silly business. And finally, one of the least consequential series of the entire season, the San Francisco Giants and the Angels of Anaheim. Giants trying to complete their first sweep of the year on Sunday and came oh so close, but they failed to do so because, of course, they did. Elliot Ramos getting called strike three, looking clearly not a strike, but too bad. He was out of challenges, and so the Giants lose on Sunday after winning Friday and Saturday, which means the Giants continue to look for their first sweep of the year. And, folks, I'm not sure it's ever going to come. They do have a home series next month against the Rockies and Reds, but otherwise, I just don't see where this is going to happen. So Remember Tony Vitello? He was sweeping left and right when he was head coach at the University of Tennessee. Still looking for that first one with the Gigantes. The Angels are awful. That's going to do it for this Monday edition of Baseball Barbacast. Thank you to Eric Fetty for joining us. Thank you to Andrew Hartz and Ross Tudor for producing this episode. We appreciate it. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. We'll be back on Wednesday. Well, we have another real trade to talk about. Who knows? But what I do know is that a week from now is the actual trade deadline, and we will be live from the studios in New York City for a trade deadline special leading up to that 6 p.m. Eastern deadline. We'll be live on YouTube. Make sure you're following, subscribe, liking, commenting, all things YouTube, Yahoo Sports MLB YouTube channel. Go support us over there. But until then, thank you all for listening. Adios.